Om, om. Is that working now? Yeah. Sorry to all of you. I think the microphone was not working. All right. Good. Once again, welcome to you all. We continue our study of chapter 10 of Shankara's great Upadesha Sahasri. And I think probably we'll come to the end of the chapter today. And as we've discussed at length, this chapter is not teaching us Vedanta, but rather is giving us what we've already learned for the sake of assimilation. Remember the lion story, looking in the pond again and again and again. And here, to use my guru's language, looking at yourself in the word mirror of Vedanta, again and again and again. When you look in the mirror, you don't see anything different, right? You always see the same funny looking, when I look in the mirror, I see a funny looking face looking at me. It doesn't change, but this process, looking in the word mirror of Vedanta, so to speak, is for the sake of assimilation. And assimilation includes, especially includes, the removal of viparita bhavana, which we talked about quite extensively at the beginning of this chapter, that is habitual wrong thinking. We won't discuss that further right now, but we can return and pick up the thread on verse 9. Good. Avidyaya bhavanaya cha karma bihi. Avidyaya bhavanaya cha karma bihi. Vivikta hatma vyavadhi sunirmalaha. Vivikta hatma vyavadhi sunirmalaha. Trigari shakti prachito hamadvayaha. Trigari shakti prachito hamadvayaha. Stita swarupe gaganam yathachalam. Stita swarupe gaganam yathachalam. Start in the second line with the word vivikta. Vivikta, separate. Free from. And then go up to the top line. Free from what? Avidyaya. Free from ignorance. Free from what else? Bhavanaya. Bhava here refers to identification with your body and mind. And finally, vivikta, free from karma bihi, free from karma. So here he's beginning with a very fundamental description of Atma being nirguna. And in this case, free from three particular attributes, free from avidya, free from identification with the body and mind, which is the result of avidya, and free from karma, which is the result of the other two. We have a causal change. So because you fail to recognize your true nature, you get so that's avidya, number one. Because of ignorance of your true nature, you get identified with your body and mind, bhava. And then because of identification with your body and mind, you perform karma. So this is the causal chain. Atma is viviktaha, free from all of that. Atma is also avyavadhihi. I've translated it here limitless, but there's a more subtle meaning. Vyavadhana or vyavadhi is that which gets in the way, that which is in between, that which is an obstruction. So Atma, which is avyavadhi, is Atma which is unobstructed. Unobstructed by what? You can find many things that would seem to obstruct atma, like avidya. But I think in this context, unobstructed by viparita bhavana, unobstructed by habitual wrong thinking. In particular, what they call dehatma buddhi, continued identification with your body and mind. And this is perhaps one of the last identifications to get rid of. There's an irony here. One of the first things you learn in Vedanta is, I am not my body. One of the last things you get rid of in Vedanta is the feeling that your body. Let me say that again. One of the first things you learn is, I am not my body. But the feeling that I am my body persists. And that feeling is actually one of the last things to be removed through these teachings. I find that ironic. So atma here is avyavadihi, unobstructed by ignorance, unobstructed especially by this habitual wrong thinking, and especially by habitual identification with your body and mind. This atma is su-nirmalaha. Nirmala, pure, su-nirmalaha, absolutely pure. And absolutely pure means atma and only atma. Utterly independent of anything else. No attributes, no qualities, just atma. And atma, of course, means consciousness. Just consciousness. Pure consciousness. Chaitanya. A Chaitanya Atma, this conscious self, and nothing else. Then he continues, Drigadi Shakti Prachataha Aham. He says, Aham Advayaha. Aham is a first person pronoun, bringing us back to a discussion we had before, and that is Nididhyasana is always in the first person. Which means you cannot do nididhyasana on the world being mithya, because that's not in the first person. You can do nididhyasana on you being satyam. And the reason I'm saying this is that nididhyasana is rooted in your experience. And that which is rooted in your experience can only be expressed in the first person, I. So it says here, aham, I am advayaha, non-dual. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. And I am drigadi shakti prachitaha. I am prachitaha, endowed with shakti, powers like drik and adi, etc. Powers like seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching, thinking, walking, moving, talking, etc., etc., etc. All of these powers are superimposed on Chaitanya Atma, on consciousness, due to ignorance. This is a basic teaching of Advaita Vedanta. All of these are present in your experience. The power to see, hear, taste, smell, and touch, power to think, power to move, walk, talk. All of these powers are present in your experience, but they don't belong to consciousness. Consciousness reveals their presence. Consciousness makes them work, so to speak. But they do not belong to consciousness. Obviously, these powers belong to your body and mind. But due to ignorance, these powers which belong to your body and mind get superimposed on Atma. We've discussed this before. And finally, Shankara concludes here. That aham is the subject of the sentence, aham, I am stitaha, established, Sorupe, in my true nature. I am established in my true nature, Gaganam Yata Achalam Yata, just like Achalam Gaganam, unmoving space. So I am established in my true nature which is unchanging. Unmoving means unchanging. Your consciousness, the consciousness is unchanging. This is one of the most important discoveries to be made in Advaita Vedanta, that your consciousness, which you always associate with the activities of your mind, your consciousness is in fact the unchanging observer of the changing conditions of your mind. Now, we've taught this really thoroughly before, but it is crucial to perform nididhyasana on this particular teaching, and because viparita bhavana. So when Vedanta says let's explore this. You hear this teaching. Your consciousness is unchanging because it requires an unchanging observer to reveal the changing conditions of your mind. There's a little bit of teaching, a little bit of logic, and you say, okay. So you understand it conceptually, but in terms of your experience, when sadness enters your mind, your consciousness feels like it's changing. Your consciousness feels like it's getting sad. But that doesn't make logical sense, because if consciousness became sad when sadness entered your mind, would you be able to notice sadness entering your mind? In order to know the arrival of sadness, don't you need to be the unchanging observer? Otherwise, how would you recognize its observer? Remember the metaphor I've given, driving side by side with another car at 60 miles an hour. If you're changing at the same rate as the other fellow, you don't see the change. So if consciousness becomes sad as sadness enters your mind, you would not perceive the arrival of sadness. And of course you do. And the reason you do is you are the unchanging observer of the changing conditions of your mind. Now here, the issue here is you understand it conceptually, but the next time you get sad, and you're looking like this and sad, and somebody asks you, are you okay? And you say, I'm just sad. When you say, I am sad, are you referring to your mind or yourself? No, be honest. Would you say my mind is sad? Who will say it? If these teachings have really gone in, you will. But conventionally, when you say, I am sad, you're not referring to in reality, you're referring to your mind. That's the truth. But when you say, I am sad, that I is referring to me, right? And that true me is consciousness. You've made the mistake. That's my point. That is, these teachings can be intellectually grasped, but that often fails to remove this habitual identification with your body and mind. So in this case, identification with the mind. When the mind is sad, I am sad. What would it take to come to the point where when sadness enters your mind, you think, oh, I'm experiencing sad, and I'm not being facetious here. I'm trying to think of how I would respond. when sadness comes. And sadness comes. And I hear somebody, one of our students is struggling with cancer and is struggling a lot. When I hear that news, I feel sad. There is sadness in my mind. Yet it's absolutely clear that the sadness doesn't affect me. Sadness is present in the mind. That sadness doesn't affect me. Like a dark cloud covering the sun. It changes the experience dramatically. But that dark cloud doesn't dim the sun. The sun continues to shine. The dark cloud doesn't affect the sun. This is the goal. The goal to be able to experience sadness and know that you're okay in spite of the presence of sadness. To know that that sadness doesn't truly affect you. And how do we get there? Nididhyasana. You already understand conceptually. Now we need Nididhyasana. We've gone through the steps of Nididhyasana several times, but there was a question that came by email, so I think it's not clear enough. I'm going to go to the board, and we'll review the steps of Nididhyasana, and I'll show how that would be applied in this case. So this is the procedure for formal Nididhyasana. Formal Nididhyasana means seated Nididhyasana. And step one is meditation. Dhyana in Sanskrit. Step one is meditation. And by the way, it requires a significant level of skill in meditation. And a significant level of skill is the kind of skill you build up over a period of years. So if you haven't already started, now's the time. Don't wait. You need meditative skills. First of all, that meditation is going to bless you in a thousand ways. Why? I don't understand why someone would not want to meditate, honestly. I've been a meditator for, 40 years more, a long time. And that meditation has been so wonderful in how it's enhanced my life in so many ways. I can't imagine why anyone wouldn't meditate. It puzzles me. Anyway, so meditation is useful for so many reasons, and it's crucial for the sake of Nididhyasana and a fairly high skill level. And I call it skill level because, as you've probably heard me say before, meditation is a learned skill. So you have to learn that skill, you have to develop that skill, and when you've developed that skill sufficiently, you'll be able to do 1-3. That's good. When you've developed the skill sufficiently, you'll be able to make your mind silent. And that silence is not the goal. The expression I've been using, and I'll explain it in a moment, is you rest in yourself. Now, this is deliberately a poetic kind of expression, because I'm trying to describe what can't be described. I really don't have better words for it. It's a condition of complete stillness in which you remain as you are. You are yourself in the absence of any encumbrances whatsoever, which means in the absence of any mental activity. That's why it's a state of silence. So in that state of silence, you rest in yourself. The only thing present is you as consciousness. That's what I mean by rest in yourself. And this can be accomplished when you are sufficiently skilled in meditation. And the and the good thing is that you don't need to rest in yourself for hours at a time. Just a few moments is enough. You don't have to be a master meditator, a mahayogi. You don't need to be. You need to be able to pull this off, so to speak, just for a few moments. That's all you need. Because looking in what we're doing, or what we're going to do, is look in the mirror. How long do you have to stare in the mirror? Just a moment. So that's the idea here. Leading us to step three. And step three is where you begin the contemplation, which means you have to start thinking again. So in step two, thinking has come to an end. In step three, you start thinking again. And a good way, there's no rule about how to do this, but a good approach would be to introduce a question based on what it is you're contemplating on. For example, right now we're discussing the nature of the mind being achalam, unmoving. So the question would be, am I truly unchanging? That would be the question. And make it as simple and clear as possible. Am I? And don't make mistakes. Is my consciousness unchanging? There's no my consciousness. This is a higher level of Vedanta. I am the consciousness that remains when I'm resting in myself. Is the consciousness, which is me, am I subject to change? That is the question. After introducing that question, step four is you return to resting in yourself. This is looking in the mirror. How long do you need to do it? Not for hours. So after introducing the question, do I change? Am I changing? And then you rest in yourself. And then step five is you reflect. You reflect on that question. When I was resting in myself, was there any change? Notice this comes after resting in yourself, so you can't think of anything here. So you rest in yourself, and then you return to thinking, and you reflect. In those moments when I was resting in myself, did anything change? Was there any change? And then, do it again. Introduce the question again. Let me try it again. Let me see. Does anything change when I rest in myself? Rest in yourself? Did anything change? No. Do it again and again and again. That's nididhyasana. Repeated reflection. Doing it once is good. If doing it once is good, doing it many times is much better. Every time you reflect on your true nature, you are reducing the habitual wrong thinking bit by bit by bit by bit. In more technical terms, you are weakening the samskara or vasana. In fact, we call it deha vasana. The habitual identification with your mind and body is gradually being weakened, deha vasana. In modern science, you would say you are reprogramming your neural circuits. You are training your neurons to fire differently. And this is a well understood principle. by repeating the same mental action again and again and again, it gets programmed into the chemical concentrations at your neurons. It is a physiological change that predisposes your neurons to continue working in that beneficial way. So this is the method for Nididhyasana. I suppose I should mention this doesn't come from any text. Oh, thank you. In fact, it's important, I should mention. This doesn't come from... Oh, that's okay for a moment. This doesn't come from any text. Nididhyasana is not generally taught because it's presumed Nididhyasana is an advanced practice. So it's presumed you'll figure it out. Honestly, it's not formally taught, and I've yet to see a scripture or a text lay it out in so many terms as we have on the board. So this is based on my own experience. So my meditation started in late 1970s, so you can figure out how many years of meditation and intense meditation every day. So this is the result. Okay, oh, let's give one more example. Back to the board. Suppose I just gave the example of meditating yourself as unchanging consciousness. The other one, we had another word in this verse, advayaha, non-dual. Let me give you one more example of how this process of meditation would be applied to contemplation on yourself, Nididhyasana, on you being non-dual. Not, so we'll just do it. Start by meditating, rest in yourself at least for a few moments, then the question, am I non-dual? That's the question. Am I non-dual? Then rest in yourself. Then the reflection, when I was resting myself, was there anything else there? You know, if you are dual, then there means there's something else present. In addition to you, something else would be present. But when you're resting in yourself, nothing else is present. So that resting in yourself becomes an experiential confirmation of non-duality. You already know, understand non-duality conceptually. But here is an experiential confirmation, and that is while you're resting in yourself, there's nothing else present in your experience. There is no second, advaita. And therefore, you reflect on that truth. Afterwards, this is the experiential confirmation. Okay, enough. Let us continue. Set my, there we go. Is that working? Yes. Next verse. Aham param brahma vinishchayatmadring. Aham param brahma vinishchayatmadring. Na jayate bhuyayati shrutir vachaha. Na jayate bhuyahiti shruter vachaha na chaiva bije twasati prajayate na chaiva bije twasati prajayate palam na janmasti tato hyamohata palam na janmasti tato hyamohata. Aham param brahma. I am the ultimate, the supreme Brahman, vinishchayatmadrik. Oh, let me introduce. We're actually, as we come to the end of the chapter, there's a shift of emphasis here. And the shift of emphasis is a little less focused on Nididhyasana, although it is still continuing. But now the new emphasis is on the, what English word to use? So this is called Palashruti. It is a description of the benefits of this practice. And there are several verses left. Those several verses that are left will each one in different ways will describe the benefits of this practice of Nididhyasana. And the purpose of that at the end of a text is pretty obvious. It's to encourage you to practice Nididhyasana. That's the whole point. So we're going to see some words of encouragement here as we continue. So Aham Param Brahma, I am Supreme Brahman. Atmadrik, one who has discovered one's true nature, nishchaya, with firmness. So we've distinguished in this class many times between the moment of discovery and then being firmly established in that knowledge. We said, remember the timeline I've drawn on the board. There is a moment of discovery, but that moment of discovery is followed by a long period of assimilation. That assimilation here is referred to by the word nishchaya, firmness. So atmadrik, one who has discovered atma, but nishchaya, has firmness in that discovery. For such a person, najayate bhuyaha, that person never gets reborn. Iti shrutehe vachaha. That is the vachaha, that is what is taught, shrutehe, in the scriptures, in the shruti. So according to the scriptures, you are never born again. And what we're going to see now really shows Shankara's inclination. So okay, so it's established in shruti, but isn't it also established by yukti? Shruti yukti anubhava, we've discussed many times. So having established that the absence of rebirth is taught by shruti, then Shankara flips his orientation and shows how it's also established by yukti. Absence of rebirth is established by logic. How? He says, BJ to asati. Break the words apart. BJ asati. He gives a metaphor. When there is no seed, you have to connect these words together. Palam, in the next line, na prajayate. You get skillful at connecting these distant words when you get skillful at Sanskrit. BJ to asati. When there is no seed, palam, the fruit, na prajayate, doesn't come about. If you have an apple, if you have an apple seed, eventually you can get an apple. If you have no apple seed, will you ever get an apple? So where there is no seed, there is no plant. Where there is no cause, there is no effect. That's what he's talking about here. Where there's no cause, there's no effect. And in the same way as it is for a seed and a tree, the same thing. When there is no cause for rebirth, there's no rebirth. What is the cause for rebirth? Ignorance. Look at the end of the verse. He, indeed, amohata, when there is the absence of ignorance. Moha is ignorance here. Amohata, tataha, therefore. Amohata, when there is the absence of ignorance, na janma asti, there is no rebirth. Where there's no cause, there's no effect. Where there's no seed, there's no tree, no cause, no effect, no ignorance. Ignorance is a root cause that culminates in rebirth. No cause, no effect. And we've seen, remember, avidya, kama, karma, and then the endless loop. I've had that on the board before. So that's the endless loop, avidya, kama, karma. And the root cause is avidya. Avidya is the bijam, the seed, the cause. So you remove that seed, which is ignorance, you remove the cause, and you have no effect, the effect being rebirth. So here we see the first verse where Shankara is encouraging you to practice Nididhyasana by pointing to the benefits. And the benefit of Nididhyasana, here he says, is freedom from rebirth. Then. And that's not old. My computer is acting up here. Let's see if this works. Here we go. All right. Mamedamittam chatatedamidrisham. Mamedamittam chatatedamidrisham. Tathahamevam paropichanyata. Tathahamevam paropichanyata. Vimudataivam najanasya kalpana. Vimudataivam najanasya kalpana. Sade same brahmani chadvaye shive. Sada same brahmani chadvaye shive. First half, he gives an example of duality. What is the example of duality? Mama idam itam. This much is mine. Mama idam, this is mine. Tata, in the same way, idam idrisham. And this is of such a nature. Number one, this is mine. Number two, this is so-and-so. This is a pot, this is a tree. This is hard, this is soft. Then, tata, in the same way, aham evam. I am thus. This is me. This is my nature, my personality, my appearance. And finally, api, also, parahacha, anyata. And paraha, somebody else, is anyata, different. He's just giving some examples of duality. This is mine, this is such and such. I am such, he is different from me. So, and Shankara just lays it out here. He says, evam vimudhata. This is ridiculous. He said, vimudhata. This is all ignorance. This is all delusion. It is all kalpana. It is all the imagination janasya of people. This is all, if he spoke American English, he'd say, it's all silliness. It's all based on ignorance. And then he concludes here. All of this, that na has to be connected to the last line. Na brahmani. All of that does not exist in Brahman. Same brahmani, in the unchanging Brahman. Sada same brahmani, in the eternally unchanging Brahman, which is cha advaye, in Brahman, which is non-dual, in Brahman, which is shiva. Shiva here is an adjective, pure. In pure Brahman, none of that duality occurs. This is mine, this is so-and-so, I am so-and-so, he is different. All of that delusion, and Shankara just boldly says here, all of that is vimudata. It's ignorance. And it doesn't exist in Brahman. It doesn't. We could, Pooja Swamiji liked to do this. We could say that it doesn't exist in Brahman. Brahman exists in it. Look at this. This body doesn't exist in Brahman. Brahman exists in this body, so to speak, by giving reality to this body. But Shankara's point here is that the locus of ignorance, it's a technical point, his point is the locus of ignorance is not Brahman. Not that Brahman. Who needs to get enlightened? Brahman? How about Atma, consciousness? Consciousness needs to be enlightened. No. The locus of ignorance is your mind. Wherever the problem is, that's where the solution has to be applied. The locus of ignorance is not Brahman. The locus of ignorance is your mind. Next.
Yadadvayam jnanamativa nirmalam. Yadadvayam jnanamativa nirmalam. Mahatmanam tatra na shoka mohata. Mahatmanam tatra na shoka mohata. Tayorabhave nahi karma janmava. Tayorabhave nahi karma janmava. Bhavedayam veda vidam vinishchayah. Ayam veda vidam vinishchayah.
Yadad, start in the second line. Mahatmanam, for the great ones, the enlightened ones, for them, na shoka mohata. Those who are enlightened have no shoka, no suffering, and no moha, ignorance. So they have, these words have different meanings in other contexts. In this context, shoka, suffering, moha, ignorance. So they are free from suffering and ignorance, the enlightened ones. Tatra, what, under what circumstances are they free? Because of what circumstances are they free from suffering and ignorance? Because, yet, because, first line, because advayam, because the reality is, because of advayam jnanam, the key word here is jnanam. Due to knowledge, what kind of knowledge? Advayam jnanam, knowledge of the non-dual reality because of which everything exists. That non-dual knowledge, which is ativa nirmalam, extremely pure, and the commentator makes it clear, extremely pure means, remember, purity means absence of impurities. So what are the impurities that are absent? And he points to the main problem for that's addressed through Nididhyasana, free from viparita bhavana, free from habitual wrong thinking. So non-dual knowledge, which is completely free from habitual wrong thinking, which means that moment of discovery, non-dual knowledge, but completely free from habitual wrong thinking through a long process of assimilation. This is what he's describing. For such people, tayoho abhave, this is the third line, in the absence of those two, what two? Shoka and moha, in the absence of suffering and ignorance, nahi karma. In the absence of them, there is no karma, na janmava, nor is there rebirth. Remember, no cause, no effect. Ignorance is a cause for suffering. So here we have shoka moha. Moha means ignorance. Moha is a cause for shoka, suffering. Moha, ignorance, is a cause for karma and a cause for janma. When you remove the cause, all the effects are removed. There are multiple effects. You know, the metaphor in modern times given is the house of cards. You remove just one card and the whole thing comes tumbling down. In this case, the one card that's removed is ignorance. The house comes tumbling down. Na karma janma va bhavet. So they become free from ignorance, from suffering, from karma, and from rebirth. Ayam vinishchayaha. This is what has been ascertained last time. Ayam vinishchayaha. This is what has been ascertained Vedavidam by those who have studied the Vedas, by those who have studied the Upanishads, by those who have become enlightened. All right, next.
Sushuptavat jagrati yo na pasyati. Sushuptavat jagrati yo na pasyati. Dvayam tu pasyannapi cha.
There's a typo here. Cha dvaya twa. There's a twa missing there. Not twa tataha. In between dvaya and ta taha, you have to put twa. So advaya twataha is the correct spelling, is correct here. When I looked at this morning, it was missing a syllable. So these verses have 12 syllables and a quarter, and this one kind of went crashed at the end, missing a syllable. Anyway,
dvayam tu pasyannapi cha dvaya twataha, dvayam tu pasyannapi cha dvaya twataha, tata cha kurvannapi nishkriyaschayah, tata cha kurvannapi nishkriyaschah. Sahatma vinnanya hitiha nishchayaha. Sahatma vinnanya hitiha nishchayaha.
Yaha napashyati dvayam. Yaha, one who dvayam, duality, napashyati, one who doesn't see duality, jagrati, while awake, sushuptavat, just like in deep sleep. One who sees the absence of duality in the waking state, not just in deep sleep, and not just in nididhyasana. One who sees non-duality here and now in the waking state. Shankara is talking about the results of nididhyasana. When you look in that word mirror enough times, it changes your worldview gradually. It changes your worldview to such an extent that you can look at the world and see it almost like a painting on canvas. Or alternatively, a good modern that painting on canvas is an old metaphor. Actually, they talk about painting on a wall. This expression comes in Vidyaranya's Panchadashi text. Wonderful metaphor. Here's a better modern expression. When you watch a movie, you're sitting and especially in a theater, much more impressive. Although I don't remember the last time I've been in a theater, certainly many decades by now. Anyway, in a theater, you see that on a huge screen, you see duality. Inside the projector, there's one light bulb. All that duality you see on the screen is one light. That light has been conditioned, of course, by the shining through the film, but it is one and the same light that appears as the duality you see on the screen. I'm suggesting this as a metaphor for how you can look at duality around you in the waking state, which means right now, and appreciate that in spite of the appearance of duality, all of this is one non-dual Brahman. To appreciate that in the waking state takes a lot of nididhyasana, which is what Shankara's point here is. If you do enough nididhyasana, you'll come to see that the waking state is not so different from the dream state. This is one of Gaudapada's main points in his famous Karika. We think waking state and dream state are so utterly different. Maybe not. Anyway, an intellectual understanding of non-duality can gradually be assimilated to such an extent through nididhyasana, it can gradually be assimilated so that your understanding of non-duality is no longer an abstract concept, but it is an immediately present truth or fact. What is here now is non-dual Brahman. So that takes a lot of nididhyasana to appreciate it in the waking state. So, pashyan api, in the middle of the second line, even while seeing, na pashyati dvayam. You don't see duality even while seeing. Why? Advayatvataha. Because you have completely assimilated the non-duality. Advayatva, advaya, non-dual, advayatva, non-duality. You have completely assimilated this non-duality. When it is completely assimilated, even while seeing, you appreciate that the appearance of duality is just that. It's a mere appearance, like on the movie screen. On the movie screen, there is but one light, and in this experience of duality, there is but one Brahman. And one more example he gives, Tathacha, in the third line. And in the same way, the long-term practice of nididhyasana will lead you to understand that you are nishkriyaha, actionless, kurvan api, even while acting. To be actionless even while acting. Right now I'm teaching. Teaching is an action. Consciousness doesn't do anything. By the way, what I just did, and I've said I would explain informal nididhyasana, what I just did was informal nididhyasana. And that is, and I'll just explain what I mean by informal nididhyasana. Informal nididhyasana is to contemplate, to reflect on these truths anytime and anywhere. And that's what I just did. So I said, right now I'm teaching. That's a question. The question comes, am I teaching? So I pause for just a moment, and I'm just sharing with you what went on in my mind during that momentary pause. I said, right now I'm teaching, and then I paused. In that pause, I said, well, wait a minute, am I teaching? I am consciousness. Consciousness doesn't do anything. Teaching takes place, but I, as consciousness, am not teaching. To have that reflection is an example of informal nididhyasana. And you can practice it anytime, and it's probably you need to do a lot of formal nididhyasana before this informal nididhyasana is accessible to you, but it becomes accessible. You can pause and reflect anytime, anywhere, in any situation, anytime you bring your mind to appreciate the reality of what is. To appreciate the reality of what is in the midst of your daily activities is a good definition of informal nididhyasana. Okay, let's finish this off. So, this person who has done enough nididhyasana to appreciate that even while seeing duality, there is no duality, even while acting, I remain actionless. So someone who has done enough nididhyasana to arrive at that point, Shankara says, saha atmavit. That person is a knower of atma. That person is enlightened. Na anyaha. And not others. Which means, Shankara, the question comes again and again. Who is enlightened? Are you enlightened with that moment of discovery? Or are you enlightened after that period of assimilation? So Shankara makes it clear here. That moment of discovery is not enough. He says one who is enlightened is the one who he's described here, the one who has done enough nididhyasana to recognize non-dual existence constantly in every situation. He says that person, saha atmavit, that person is enlightened, na anyaha, and not others. Not others who have not made. Remember the timeline? So I said there was a period of preparation leading up to a moment of discovery, followed by a period of assimilation. So, who is enlightened? Obviously, those who have not yet made the discovery can't be considered enlightened. They are preparing themselves, and through that process of preparation, eventually they will have that moment of discovery. But Shankara has very clearly said in this verse, that's not the goal. Because even though you've made that discovery, you still have so much viparita bhavana, so much contrary thinking, wrong thinking in your mind, that not much has changed. Therefore, according to Shankara, one who is enlightened is one who has continued with that process of assimilation. Iti iha nishchayaha. And this is iti nishchayaha. This is a conclusion. The conclusion of Vedanta, that enlightenment is assimilation. The term that's often used is jnana nishta. Nishta, firmness. So that moment of discovery, jnana. After the assimilation, jnana nishta. Now, here's something you may not have thought about. Jnana nishta is not a point. You don't say, so there is a point of discovery. But this is a process, a continuing process. Enlightenment can be considered then a continuing process. The process of assimilation. And the idea is the more you assimilate, the more you enjoy freedom, the more you enjoy fullness, the more you enjoy moksha. So let us shift our thinking about enlightenment, moment of discovery, followed by a process of assimilation. When does that process of assimilation end? When you die, and not before. Lifelong. And how wonderful that is. It means every day, every week, you assimilate more and more and more and more. And I have to admit, you know, now that my age is increasing a little bit more, I'm becoming more and more amazed by how Nididhyasana transforms the way you think and the way you experience the world. Okay, we have just one verse left to complete this chapter.
Itidam uktam paramartha darshanam. Itidam uktam paramartha darshanam. Maya hi vedanta vinishchitam param. Maya hi vedanta vinishchitam param. Vimuchyate smin yadi nishchito bhaven. Vimuchyate smin yadi nishchito bhaven. Nalipyate vyoma vadeva karma bihi. Nalipyate vyoma vadeva karma bihi.
So Shankara addresses us in a very powerful way at the end of this chapter. Thus, this uktam has been taught by whom? Second line, maya, by me. This has been taught by me. This what? Paramartha darshanam. Remember the title? Was Drishi Swarupa, the nature of the seer, and Paramartha darshanam, discovery of the absolute reality. So he refers to the title in his conclusion here. He, Vedanta Vinishchitam Param, this Paramartha Darshanam, this teaching of absolute reality, Shankara says, that I have just now taught, this is Param, the highest, Vedanta Vinishchitam, the highest truth that's ascertained in the teachings of Vedanta. Third line, Asmin Yadi Nishchitaha. Yadi asmin nishchitaha bhavet. If you are nishchitaha, if you are firmly established asmin in this teaching, if you are firmly established in this teaching, then muchyate, then you are freed, nalipyate vyomavat, and you are not affected by worldly suffering. Vyomavadeva karma bihi, just like space. Nalipyate karma bihi, you are not affected by karma. Vyomavadeva, like space. You move your hand through space, space is not affected by that karma. In the same way, you as pure consciousness are not affected by anything. Nice, first of all, nice that Shankara here addresses us personally and gives us this param, Vedanta, Vinishchitam, this highest truth, this highest ascertainment, ultimate teaching of Vedanta. One last comment here, and just a little, I've been doing translations for such a long time that I become highly sensitized to certain mistakes that are often made. Look at my translation here. One is liberated and remains untainted like space. The verb that I'm translating is bhavet. Those of you who know some Sanskrit know that the root bhu can mean be or become, both meanings. And roughly 50-50. Half of the time it means be, half of the time it means becomes. Look what happens if you take the wrong meaning. So one is liberated and becomes untainted but like space. Becomes untainted? Atma becomes untainted? Look how a wrong translation can absolutely mess up the meaning. So yes, bhavet can mean would become, but and 50% of the time it means that. But to take that meaning destroys what Shankara is describing here. So Shankara says, you remain as who you always have been. Just freed from all the clutter, so to speak, the clutter that's due to ignorance. Okay, good place to conclude. We'll start the next chapter in our next class.
Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om shanti, shanti, shanti.
Om tat sat.